Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Welcome to the Black House 106.1 FM, Wellington Access Radio. You're in the studio today with Eddie and Eva. How are you doing?
Good.
It's a fucking shit day today.
It is.
It is terrible. Like, I feel like I shaved my head recently, and at one level, it's been so weird how much I feel on, like, the sensations on my hair, the breeze, the sun, but also it's this sort of thing of, like, I kind of, there was a trade-off I was making where I was like, okay, cool, so I'll shave my head before winter.
Why?
Because if I fucking hate how my hair ends up looking, I can then just spend the entire winter wearing a hat.
Yeah.
And then by the time summer rolls back around, it should hopefully have grown into something that I can deal with. But so far, I'm liking it. Mm. But the trade-off has been is that I've shaved my head just before winter.
Yeah. I mean, climate change is pretty bad, it turns out. Like, the weather is so nuts in Wellington. Like, I just got back from the UK, and climate change there, it's just everything's hot and it's kind of nice all the time. But this is so depressing.
I remember seeing a podcast, and it was a couple of Scottish comedians talking about, like, someone's like, the predicted kind of temp climate rates right, so it's kind of going is that Glasgow will have, like, the climate of Spain, and someone's like,
lovely,
and he's got, like, obviously dour Glaswegians being like, I don't know how we're going to survive that. Can you imagine just, like,
being happy,
Glaswegian,
not being miserable? Like, British people are so miserable with the weather.
But it's also, like, I think that's good. That's what I'm curious about, is to be like, how much of, like, this kind of, like, depressed, and again, like,
will
I think,
it improve them?
Well, yeah, this depressed kind of Scots Presbyterian sort of kind of, like, bemoaning kind of dour kind of depression.
Yeah.
Shifts, because then it's like, oh well, it's like, oh, actually we can't be,
yeah,
we
can't be miserable all the time.
But no, it's been really good. So, like, Eva, you and I, like, you're one of my friends from uni. It's been really cool. Like, I feel like I met you in my last year of uni, and then then you went over to the UK for a bit, and you just come back from the UK. How are you finding being back here?
It turns out this government's bad. I've just been ignoring the news over there because, like, stuff's so much more crazy over there. But it's really bad here. So, yeah, sort of just getting, like, dipping my feet back into what Wellington is now.
Yeah. I remember the first time we caught up, we went to Capital Market for dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were just, and you were like, I remember you walking in and be like, what happened to this?
It's so
dead.
Yeah, and there's, like, no people, there's no, like, anything. It used to be, like, the hub. It used to be, like vibrant. But, yeah. But then I think people have, like, sort of shifted. It seems like, the communities that I've sort of, like, engaged myself in since being back, like, everyone's kind of organized in different places now, which is pretty good.
I think it's one of those ones where, like, the heart seems to be kind of popping off. There's a lot of cool developments in the heart. There's, like, I think it seems to be much more spread out into the suburbs.
Yeah, Porto as well, it seems.
Yeah, like, it seems to be, like, the suburbs kind of, and, like, the kind of other kind of cities in the greater Wellington region seem to have a lot more going.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite cool as well. Like, obviously I would like the kind of, like, centre city to be, like, to be nice.
Yeah.
But I also think
no one can afford it.
But yeah, like, I also think, yeah, like, there's the affordability thing. I think there's been, like, just lots of ongoing projects that have stalled. Like, and things like, the balancing act of things that will probably benefit Wellington in the long run, like the Golden Mile.
Yeah.
Things that will benefit us in the long run, but obviously in the short term have are detrimental, and therefore people really, really against it, something that's additionally detrimental in a point in time where things are particularly tough.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's that sort of like, I have faith that it'll kind of turn around eventually. Like, I think it just...
Yeah. I like Wellington. I've come around to it. At first I was like, what the f***? What is going on? But yeah, it's... Yeah, there's stuff happening here. It's good.
Yeah, no, I feel like... And I feel like it's been nice. Like, I feel like I have noticed, like, from, like, the African community sort of stuff. Like, I feel like there's... Yeah. I've noticed lots of... There's lots of different kind of groups, little groups, and like with like event managements or people kind of doing stuff around Wellington now, which is nice. Yeah. Like, it's been, obviously there's been some really cool like people who've been kind of, you know, the established kind of people who've been doing events and gigs in Wellington up to this point. But I think I do like that I'm seeing a bit more kind of more people kind of getting the opportunity and kind of spreading that sort of stuff, because then it at least means that there's in theory some kind of market for African music and that sort of thing.
And our generation as well, like, I am pretty optimistic that we're taking more action to sort of do that. Like, you definitely are like one of the key organizers for like getting everyone together just for community, because someone has to do it.
I feel like that's always been my trade-off. It's just like, and I think it's one of those ones, like, I know Leah's always talked about, you know, we need like a community centre, we need like a spot. And
like,
I feel like, I've always been like, Laundry Bar would be like the ideal spot to like, for like, if there was an African or a Caribbean restaurant there, like, kind of hard, kind of take away a little bit of sit down, but also the kind of spot that kind of like, you know, would, you know, could stay up until midnight and just like, just
it
have like,
people.
Have music there. And then just, yeah, it'd be nice, just, it feels just like it kind of has the right things to kind of make it like a cool spot, but
obviously money. We need to meet some investors.
Rent. But no, it's interesting. So, like, you were telling me you and Leah went to an event last night.
Yeah.
So what was that about?
Oh, I should have looked at what it was. It was kind of like a community, like, kōrero about archiving and the importance of that. And yeah, like events like that are so good for just your brain to just think. Because obviously we have, like, the threat of the Internet Archive and the Wayback Machine, which I'm so freaked out about. But then that event, like, it made me feel a lot. Like, it really helped my anxiety about it, because they were like, you know, archival practices have existed for, like, forever. And especially
history,
in Indigenous communities, like, oral histories and music and passing on, information, organization, ideas through music. So there are ways that we can fight it. Sort of like adapting to how to do that in the digital age. There's like the internet, like if you Google stuff now, it's just, you get the 5 results that are just repeated. Like,
and it's the sort of thing, it's like, and it's compounded, like, I think like the advent of AI on a massive scale has just like
bots
destroyed any ability to search for things properly.
And real people interactions online, like it's a mess. But then there are alternatives, and there are ways that people can get around that I do think is probably good for everyone's mental health to like discuss more rather than like panicking, because like it is really scary, like what the powers that be are doing.
I think it's the scary thing in a lot of sense of like when it, especially like, so I think a really good example is like film and media, that sort of type of media, right, where part of the issue is that like with the kind of prevalence of streaming services and that sort of thing, there's now such a big thing about who owns the rights to stream certain stuff. But the thing is that there's also things where because of a lot of that legal framework just is so old and so outdated. There's certain, like, there's like, I remember talking to one of my coworkers who was a massive cinephile, and he was just like, there's certain pieces of media or certain TV shows or certain movies that just can't go on any streaming services because they're trapped in a rights limbo. Just like they're just stuck in a space, so there's no way to access it. So unless you kind of like, and he's like, unless you, and I think he was like, I had it on DVD, but then my wife kind of threw everything, and we had a big clear out, and she threw it out. Yeah. She's like, oh, we don't need this; it'll be on streaming, sort of thing.
Need everything.
And then he was like, then I don't have it anymore, and I can't access it. Like, and I think he was very solidly in the camp of I don't want to pirate anything.
Well,
but I think
everyone should be pirating.
But I think that's a kind of, I think there's a kind of shifting perspective when it comes to piracy on that sort of things. And obviously, if you can buy something legally,
to support the artist directly,
and it's cost effective for you to do so, I think you should buy it, right? But I think when you have a lot of media that you can't access anymore, it's very hard to access. I think if you can find it online and it's able to be pirated, then yeah. I think that's a very fair approach to things.
Yeah, I'm not going to pay Netflix. Like, I'm just not. Like, it's like these evil companies like that are gatekeeping art and making it like accessible to only certain people. And then, you know, we have all the problems where, like, one platform has this and one platform has this. So if you want to, like, legally watch everything that's coming out, like, you have to be spending so much money. It's impossible.
And I think there's a sort of thing of, like, I heard someone talk about, what was it? Well, I had a thought about piracy. It was fully formed and then it's gone. But no,
I just think do it.
Yeah. Oh, I think it was that sort of thing of, there was a perspective from, I think it was a video game company. I can't remember who it was, but they were just like, honestly, people pirating your shit is one of the best advertisements for it. And
yes,
like,
yes.
Often, not always, but like, there was seemingly a correlation between like piracy of a game, but then people, and I think, it goes back to this idea of like people trying to be, you know, you build a customer base. And I think historically, up until I'd say like the kind of mid 2010s, late 2010s,
yeah.
I think there probably was quite an idea of like, if you build a game or you have a series or you have a community that you've built up around something,
yeah.
you can build that faith, you can build that confidence. And actually, if someone pirates your game, they're playing your game.
Yeah, and they're a fan.
And if they like it, then. Yeah. What often happens is that someone will be like, oh, it comes on sale on Steam, and goes like, okay, actually, I'll buy that. I want to contribute, sort of thing. But I think there's kind of been a shift over the last kind of, I guess, probably the last 5-10 years that's going to become increasingly about, A, you don't own anything anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you don't own, like, video games, you don't own your video games. Music, you don't own your music. You own a license to that music.
Yeah, that can go away if you stop paying.
And increasingly, it's the sort of thing of like, and then it seemingly it's the shift where it's like, and often it's because you've had like investors, like it's kind of like venture capital, a lot of invest, like of kind of predatory investment where it becomes it's solely about your bottom line, especially with video game companies. And it's a lot of video game companies have burned their bridges with the players that enjoy their games because they were like, well, the way to make line go up is to implement these practices, and then that kind of, then A, the game quality goes down, and B, you have a whole bunch of people who are just really, really angry about the thing you make.
Well, I think like gamers are a really good example, because like gamers are fans and nerds and will show up, they will support, they will put money into things they believe in, and like the community is so important. So I think like with Nintendo, like we see everyone's just like, no, like you guys are evil. We're not going to just throw money at you because you say so. And I think another example is like, so I finished studying, and I don't, like, the second I graduated, the university cut me off from everything. So, like, you know, if you want to get a paper, like, the way you do it is you email the author, because authors always want to give their work. Yeah. And there's these, like,
it's the paywall. So this year. Yeah. Because that's the thing I'm like a little bit annoyed about, is that there's certain books and stuff like that, like, when I finished my official thesis, like I think what I've kind of discovered through my research process is I'm like, what I'd like to do is I'd like to probably, like, not necessarily, I'd like to do something, I still want to do something that's kind of research based, like more for my own interest sort of thing, but I want, like, I have a real interest in black nationalism and religion. I'd like to do more and on like black nationalism and like conspiracy theory and alternate history, which I find fascinating. But I'm like, I want to do something in that vein. I don't necessarily want it to be like a published through the strict rigor of academia. Yeah,
exactly.
But the thing is also like, there are certain books that I know are at the library because I've like had a chance, I've got them out, or I've had a chance to kind of cursory glance at them. But then also like, if I'm not a student anymore, I can't get those books out.
Yeah.
So then it's like, I don't have access to the database of analysis of people responding to that work. Like there's like, you're cut out and it's entirely paywalled.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like digitizing books, like I guess, you know, you could go and scan it manually yourself, or use the, like download all the PDFs. Like I think that's good practice anyway.
And I think I kind of fell out of doing that. Like I think when I was overseas, like when I was in Brazil, I like saved all my, it's on a hard drive somewhere.
Yeah.
But I saved all the books that I was using, all my course readings, because specifically because I was like, do you know what, this is really interesting stuff. And like, especially if I want to go out, be able to cite something or go back and discuss something, being able to get like, here's what Brazilian academics we're saying on these kind of topics here,
yeah.
as opposed to, like, I think that's just to get those different kind of perspectives as well has been really...
And never delete, like, I think data hoarding as well is actually a really good thing to be doing, especially, what was the word I learned last night? Scholasticide. Like, in Gaza, like, the way they're targeting academics and sort of erasing their work. So it's like, if we're, if they're killed, if they're bombed, like, we're, like, whose responsibility is it to sort of... preserve all of it, and I think it's all of us.
And I think there's this weird sort of thing, like, I think we always kind of joke about this idea that, like, you know, most people will have, like, thousands of photos on a hard, sitting on a hard drive, or thousands of photos on their phone that they're never going to look at and they're going to do anything.
But
I also think, like, and, like, there was, I had an example recently where it was, we were talking, I was on a Reddit thread, and it was, there's a grime producer called Zeph Ellis, or Dot Rotten, who just recently died. And then someone must have said he used to have a whole bunch of mixtapes that were on YouTube but had gotten taken down off YouTube. And someone's like, well, I have a physical copy of one of these mixtapes. Like, what do I do? Like, what do I do with it? Should I put it on YouTube? And I was like, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because what I think the value of that, even if eventually, you know, even if YouTube isn't an inherently permanent piece of technology, like, it's that sort of thing of, like, we think YouTube's really too big to fail. We think a lot of these platforms are too big to fail, but then until the point where they do. But my kind of thinking was, it's like, cool, if you put this very rare mixtape that, you know, you had to be there at that point in 2008 recording that particular live set or that particular sort of thing, that's digital archaeology. Like, that's like, we think about archaeology as very much like a kind of, like, someone digging up, whether it's old ruins or, like, digging through, like, New Zealand, a lot of archaeology is either, like, settler archaeology, so it's, like, digging up stuff from the 1800s or pre-existing Māori kind of, like, artifacts or kind of sites or kind of to try and piece together a picture of what the past looked like.
Yeah.
And digital archaeology, like, I think we need to think about some of that stuff, like, in the sense of being, like, what can people find?
Mm.
What can people find that, you know, 10 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, 200, 1,000 years from now, someone could find and then naturally be like, cool, okay, this is how people at that point in time lived. And that's actually, for as much as I think, like, streamers and, like, influencers, I think there's a lot of, I'm not going to say they're a net negative to the world, but I think there's...
They're adapted to the world that we live in.
But also I think what I think is really interesting about that from, like, when you think from an archivization sort of thing, is that you've now got thousands or tens of thousands of hours of people doing mundane shit.
Yeah.
And honestly, that in itself is fascinating. Like, as someone, you know, as an archaeologist, like, people will be like, if you found, like, you know, a tea set.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on a building site down in Dunedin, for example, and you uncovered a tea set from, like, the 1850s or whatever, or 1860s, that in itself would be an amazing find.
Yeah.
Because, like, you've now kind of pictured, or, like, for example, I think recently they managed to decode, or, like, they kind of managed to use 3D scanning technology to piece together a whole bunch of, like, rolled up Roman scrolls that they found in Pompeii.
Nice.
And the thing is, like, that tripled the amount of available first-hand information about that period of Roman history.
Yeah.
Because it's like, when we think about archaeology, we've obviously found, there's a lot of it, but we found so little of the past because not everything got preserved, not everything, you know, is preserved sort of thing.
Now we have everything.
And yeah, that's what I find really fascinating.
Literally every single thing.
Is that sort of thing. I think that's what I find really funny is, like, we have such a massive digital record of things that people did.
Yeah.
That I think that's something I find kind of interesting about, like, well, I think, yeah, streamers as a whole are kind of a, I have conflicted feelings about. But also, I sit there and go, do you know what, like, I think there's a really cool archival tool
in
there.
They do definitely have a value, and I do think the kids are all right. Like, in the ways that, because I think, like, with our generation, we've always grown up, like, there's never been a time where we weren't completely surveilled. Like, we've always had Snapchat. We've had Snap Maps. Like, that's insane. But it's normal. We're just like, we know that the government, we know that everyone is always watching us. So we just live, like, and we live knowing that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing, like, when people talk about, I saw some people talk about, why don't young people do, and it not, like, some of the kind of, why, like, you hear stories, like, my mum's, ex-partner, like, he went to Otago, and he, you know that bridge across the Leith, kind of, you know where Selwyn was, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is some Dunedin, Otago University, though. Yeah. That little bridge that headed towards where Caleb's flat was, the uni flat.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, my mum's ex, when him and his mates were at uni, drove like a beetle across that bridge, and essentially the whole thing was is that we had to get a good enough run up because it was like it really like scraped the whole car, the side of the car. But someone's like, we had to get a massive run up because, and we had to floor it, and once we started, we couldn't stop.
Yeah,
and there was, and that was an experience. And you can sit there and go, yes, obviously that maybe is a bad thing in terms of property damage. You know, there are there were different, there were conflicting perspectives on that. But I think I can't imagine anybody now even dreaming of something like that, because the moment you'd be like, the moment that happened, security footage would be out. Would be like, you make front page news, the security footage would see everything. Someone, like, all your mates would be recording it on the phone, sort of thing.
Okay, that's so funny you say that, because I have a video on my phone doing us driving through the uni, like, at 1 a.m., like, all the way, like, down, like, like, just nuts. Like,
but I think that's
like, we knew and we were recording it. We're like, haha, this is so funny. This is so illegal. Yeah. And it's like, you know, what can, like, because they, I think with New Zealand, where legally they can't do anything with the information that they can get from our phones. Mm. So I think we do have like some protections. There's a bit of And I think that we kind of, like, I don't know, the way that people do normalize doing drugs or crime on camera, and it's just like, you know, they already know. Like,
but I think that's what I find interesting about that sort of thing when we talk about being surveilled. Like, often, well, often then there's this sort of that kind of thing about why don't young people go do these sorts of things, or why are young people so awkward and that sort of thing? Is like, well, it's because everything we do gets posted online.
Yeah, yeah.
And then so that point in time, there's, you know, there's almost a and again, it almost feels like when you New Zealand talks about like tall poppy syndrome, no one wants to stand out too much, because then like the amount of people who are there watching you, and then if you fuck up somehow, then suddenly they're kind of standing, like, you've got hundreds of people there, or thousands of people who witnessed that. But anyway,
I mean, it's a good thing, like, segue. This is why I have downloaded several versions on my computer of Hail Hitler.
Okay, so context. So, for example, so what we were going to, our kind of initial kind of thing about today, we wanted to talk about Kanye West. And, like, Kanye West is a sort of figure, like, I think for us growing up musically has kind of been, like, I remember, like, when I was through high school, like, he was this kind of weird sort of genius kind of musician, a bit weird. Obviously, then he married Kim Kardashian and then went through a very, very messy public divorce, has pretty clear mental health issues, and then has kind of increasingly become more and more and more and more controversial, right? Yeah. And so then what I find, to the point, so, and a big part of that is kind of openly espousing Nazi ideology, or like parrot, whether it's, and what I find really interesting about Kanye is that, so I think he kind of gets into, he has a very, 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 like, he's lost a lot of fans, but he has a very particular rabid fan base, in a sense, that kind of can't, that kind of stands by him sort of no matter what.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think part of what I wanted to kind of, what I kind of wanted to kind of talk about was, like, I guess kind of, because you're someone who's still,
I'm an kind of apologist.
A yay apologist. And then for me, like, I'm someone who I, Probably I'd say 2022 onwards, I haven't listened to anything.
Yeah.
And I think there's an interesting discussion when we kind of talk, where, like, so where I kind of sit, Roz, is that I didn't stop listening for any one particular reason. Like, firstly, I think for me, from 2018 onwards, the music declined massively in quality.
Yeah, it did.
And that kind of coincides with his mental health decline, I'd say, from 2018 sort of onwards. But then obviously then, the more, and then so that, so there was a sort of thing, it was like kind of, so there was a aspect where, like, the music didn't grab me in the way that, like, a lot of his older stuff did. But then obviously as he kind of went through this sort of descent into, and this kind of, this massive kind of decline in terms of his mental state, and often I think a lot of his, where things like the kind of Nazi ideology or like the anti-Semitic stuff that kind of sort of comes through, it became a very easy thing to be like, So, like, I feel like where I started listening, so, like, at the beginning of, and I think the thing is, because it was a decline, I can almost track there was a point. So, I'd say from, like, 2018 to 2018 to 2022, I kind of disengaged. And then as then the divorce with Kim Kardashian kind of happened. And then I was still sort of listening, but then obviously then what I found is then he, the first sort of wave in that kind of anti-Semitic thing was he started espousing Black Hebrew Israelite sort of stuff.
Was a slippery slope.
The Black Hebrew Israelites are like a specific sub, a very small specific subsect of primarily African American, but I've seen it in the UK as well, of Black nationalism that kind of claims that African people are the original Israelites and that the modern Jewish people are pretenders.
Yeah.
The thing is that, like, within the American space, like, Black Hebrew Israelites are not they're not a big or a majority view whatsoever, but because they're just so insane, and they show up at football games, and they're dressed in, like, faux Egyptian, like, purple and gold faux Egyptian sort of stuff. They look really funny. They're kind of, and within Black community circles, a lot of people, like, I feel like a lot of people were like, I know someone like that.
They're a
joke within our community.
Yeah.
But then when you externalize it, what happens is, and I think what happened with Kanye, it happened with Kyrie Irving as well, who's a Black Hebrew Israelite, and Jay Electronica is another one as well.
Azalea Banks.
Yeah, like, what happens is that it's a very evocative narrative for liberal kind of right-wing legacy or white media to pick up on, and then they always make it feel like it's a bigger sort of issue as it was. So when
it's a very attractive, like, concept, like, I see why people are drawn to it.
But yeah, like, so when Kanye started espousing Black Hebrew Israelite stuff, I was like, okay, that's weird. And I think that was when I kind of started being like, cool, I'm not really going to engage with his stuff too much anymore. And then the thing that I found really, really weird was suddenly he started espousing white supremacist, like, anti-Semitic talking points.
Yeah.
Where it was that sort of thing of being like, that was that trajectory. And I think that was the point where I was like, that was the solid point. I'm just like, even up to that point, I was like, up to that point, I'd been like, yeah, maybe I don't listen to his new albums, but I have, like we say, when we talk about archivization, I have, like, Kanye's first couple of albums on CD.
Yeah.
And I would still happily listen to those because, like, he's not profiting from it.
Yeah.
Like, I got them all secondhand. But then when he kind of made that shift very strongly into, like, whites, into that kind of, like, white supremacist sort of, like, classic kind of, like, anti-Semitic Nazi ideology sort of thing, that was the point where I was like, I can't do that. Like, I just don't really fuck with it from there.
Yeah. I think from my perspective, like, I was kind of a late adopter of his music, so I only started listening to him in high school, and then around 2018 I was like, this is getting dicey, so I kind of, like, backed off a little bit, but then I was still like, you know what, no, I'm gonna keep going. 2022 to 25, I'd say, I had a big break. I was like, no, I actually don't want to engage in this. But then I got back into it, and I'm like, oh, actually, I think there is a lot of value, and I really don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, I think he has always been an artist that, like, pushes boundaries. Like, that's what he likes to do. He likes to play. Like, he's very educated. Like, he loves to play with the English language. And I think a lot of the ways that he is expressing himself are based in valid things. So, yeah, I want to go into the worst things he's said and done over the last years, and how we can sort of put it into the context of, like, the current climate, like the digital age and his children, the Kardashians, like, whistleblowing.
Because I think that's my sort of thing. Like, often, like, I think the kind of the underlying thread, and I don't use this as an apologetics for his behavior, but I think he's very clearly severely mentally ill.
Yeah.
In my view, none of the kind of safeguards and
safeguards,
and I think as a result, no desire to address those issues.
Or substance abuse. Another thing, like, my background is special education, which I think is really relevant here, because so much of his behavior is, like, like, there's, it's really bad behavior, but there's reasons why people act like that.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, I do want to go into, as well as like the bipolar versus the autism versus like, yeah, all of it.
Because I think, and I think the way, because the way I kind of approach, I generally sort of approach it, right, is that like my sympathy for his particular mental health struggles don't kind of factor into my, like I said, I can be sympathetic and still think that you're on some fuck shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I won't engage, right?
Yeah.
But I guess like the other thing with it is that like, what about that sort of 2018 onwards sort of period? Like what you kind of mentioned that like that's kind of that kind of that, that we kind of say that that's where that sort of decline kind of happened.
Yeah.
What do you think from your sort of analysis of it? Were the triggers of that?
I think so. One of my favorite like songs that he's done is "I Thought About Killing You," because that's a crazy song to put out. Like he essentially just goes into talking about like I've thought about murdering Kim.
Yeah.
And like these are the darkest thoughts I have, and it feels better to say them. And like, I think that every person should, like, I think he's unique in that he's saying it on such a massive scale to everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if that's the best thing, but he is an artist, so I feel like it's kind of important for him to be able to speak what he is thinking. I think it's more dangerous for people to internalize those thoughts and not share them. They should be sharing them with a therapist.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's doing it in his own way, and he's always used his music to express how he feels, his anger, pain, everything.
Mm.
And I think, like, the fact that he's not holding back is really cool. And I think Cousins as well.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Cousins because that's also one of my favorite songs.
That's the one we talked about, like him and his,
cousin
having a sexual relationship.
Yeah.
Right?
It talks specifically, because everyone's like, oh, he talks about sucking his cousin's dick. But it's like the whole song is about how him and his cousin explored porn together at a young age and acted out what they saw in it. So he gave his cousin head. And child on child sexual abuse and like sexual exploration is really normal, and not talking about it is also a dangerous thing. And he is like one of the most masculine figures in hip hop, and he's coming out saying that he engaged in that and he did that as a kid. And it's like, how many other men people have also done it and feel that they can't discuss it?
I'll push back on that sort of thing, because the song that I'd give as a contrast, right, is 2004 by YG, where YG talks about how one of his high school girlfriend's aunt sexually abused him, right?
Right, yeah.
But then I think the difference is like with, and to me the difference is, and again, like that was something very particular talking about, especially the sexual abuse of black boys.
Yeah.
Like, is one of those things that kind of is undercut and is kind of not talked about a lot.
Mm.
But then specifically YG being like the hardcore gangster rapper, like the, an active blood, or either an affiliate or a member of the Bloods.
Yeah, it can happen to anyone.
And I think the difference is that part of that conversation was, is that the difference that I'd say with, between Kanye and that is that Kanye, it feels like it's part of this ongoing breakdown.
Yeah.
Right? Versus like YG, where like YG, I kind of felt like this is someone who's kind of, has gone to, it's almost like
gone to therapy,
has
first.
Gone to therapy first and is
instead
now
of using it as
and
therapy.
Is now talking through that experience sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think, because then I think it does get into that sort of question of if this is someone is like part of his breakdown, it's that sort of, it's that balance of, it's that balance of you, what's the word I'm looking for? It's that weird thing of like, it's like watching a car crash, which, and obviously it's a thing, it's engaging, like it is, but that's kind of the part of the thing of that breakdown. It's like everyone likes watching someone have a breakdown, go through the worst sort of stuff, right?
Like everyone's loving watching his deals get taken away, the UK ban, which is like just the most fucked, ridiculous thing.
But this is recently, so Wireless Festival, he was booked to perform at Wireless, to be headline
sold
Wireless
out.
And then
the people wanted it.
But then the thing is, so here's my thing. I back the Wireless band in two things, because it was a publicity stunt by Wireless. Like, because they announced him and what, like 2 days later, kicked him off, right? It was 100% a publicity stunt.
Yeah.
And There's a really good Instagrammer called Mimi the Music Blogger who talks about, outside of Kanye, the stuff that Kanye stands for, and the problems like that sort of thing, there is an entire scene of UK music that Wireless could have gone to.
Right.
That, and I think that sort of, and I think broadly kind of represented,
picking a side,
broadly represented this kind of question of why is it that Black British artists don't get play within the UK or don't get, you know, these opportunities within the UK, and we're so reliant on this international artist sort of thing.
And but they've done it with, like, I do think the, it's an interesting choice that they're doing to show, like, to sort of throw their power around. Like, they've done it with Azealia Banks as well. She was banned from Maiden Voyage Festival. Tyler, the Creator's banned all the time from everywhere, right? Like, it's a way of control and censorship that it rubs me the wrong way, but then it's like, sometimes they are saying Nazi stuff, so...
Yeah, it's that balance of, like, for example, right, like, Tyler, the Creator, like, a lot of... Like, he was banned from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Like, he was banned from... Like, I remember, like, but then obviously, but then... If you listen to a lot of the older Odd Future stuff, like, and it's, again, it's that balance of, like,
range beta. They all are.
But I think that's the problem, right, is that, like, for me, the difference is, and obviously Eminem's kind of always been a tension about Eminem coming here, but not Odd, like, Odd Future wasn't allowed, but Eminem, who's also been, I think Odd Future was kind of banned on the premise of being homophobic.
Right.
Which is weird, because, like, Frank Ocean is part of Odd Future, Tyler, the Creator, is part of Odd Future, but then Eminem was allowed.
Yeah.
But I think with Kanye, again, the distinction I make with Kanye is that, like, maybe there's a degree of rage bait in it, but there hasn't been, like, in the same way that Odd Future has developed, like, so Frank Ocean has developed as an artist, Tyler, the Creator, has developed massively as an artist away from, like, is that sort of thing of, like, this, the idea of being edgy, Kanye, like, there's a clear development away from that type of content, away from that type of music, right? That kind of reflects, like, and especially with Odd Future, it's like, it reflects, these guys were what, like, internet kids who grew up in, like, the early days of, like, the internet forums where, like, cool, edge, what, like, being edgy and saying racial slurs or saying, saying stuff, like, saying, like, extreme things to get a reaction was part of that in early internet subculture.
Yeah.
But then obviously they've grown up and moved out of that, where Kanye, the problem is that Kanye's gone into that.
Yeah. Which is, I think, like, he really seems to be the most energized and excited about music when he is pushing those boundaries. Like, Black Skinhead, he's always been, like, people find to, you know, use Black Skinhead as, like, you know, oh, he's so woke, he's so based, and, you know, like, people can understand the context of that. Like, he's not... He wasn't actually a black skinhead. He's black. Mm. Like, he loves to play with the English language and the contradictions and the, like, you can't be both. And I think, like, I do think he's engaged in lots of Hitler stuff, but he is still black. And Hail Hitler, like, the lyrics, it's, like, nigger Hail Hitler. Like, that's, like, they contradict each other. All my niggers are Nazis, like, that doesn't make any
It is a really weird, and again, I think that's why, I think when I talked about before, like, why the Black Hebrew Israelite stuff, like, is still objectively, like, wrong, and the Black Hebrew Israelites are pretty viciously anti-Semitic, which, again, bad. But that's what I think surprised me was, like, I've listened to hip-hop enough for, like, similar sort of, like, kind of, not necessarily the full Black Hebrew Israelite sort of stuff, but, like, the 5% Nation of Gods and Earths, like, the entire Wu-Tang Clan sort of stuff, like, a lot of black nationalism has played around primarily with the idea that black people are the true Israelites, so it's a thing. A lot of black nationalist movements have done that because it's about, because historically, like, the point in time where those movements are founded, like, the 1920s, probably the, you know, from the 1910s through the 1930s, there's this idea of how can we create, especially in America, and the Rastas as well, same sort of thing, how can we create an identity that positions black people not as inferior, but as the true chosen people, as a chosen people.
It's appealing, like, it's a really appealing and attractive.
And there's a consistent, and again, like, there's a consistent metaphorical, like, so, like, for example, like, there was a lot of comparison between the Israelites in bondage in Egypt and African slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even in New Zealand, like, Te Kuti and the Hold and Ringatu, that movement kind of was also based on this idea that, you know, this kind of conflation, this comparison, not necessarily an adoption of the identity, but a comparison between the colonization and land theft of Māori and the Israelites, the biblical Israelites, right? But then that's what I found so strange about, and again, when you think about like the kind of rise of the far right, this kind of, you know, neo-Nazis becoming quite a common occurrence within public life again, sort of thing. Mm. And that's what I found really interesting about Kanye suddenly shifting from something that was like, cool, I understand, I fundamentally disagree with him when he's like in that kind of Black Hebrew Israelite sort of space, but I know that, like, I listen to the Wu-Tang Clan, and the Wu-Tang Clan are all 5%ers who, you know, there's some differences in opinion, but there's like still some kind of similarity there. But then what I found, right, was then he went into like the white supremacist sort of stuff, and I'm just like, well, this is now really strange that you're, and in a way we're like, obviously, in a way we're like, you see other Black people shilling for the far right, like Candace Owens, that sort of thing. I kind of look at those and go, cool, there's a clear profit incentive for you to sell out.
Yeah.
There's a clear profit incentive behind you espousing far right talking points. Yeah. With Kanye, the thing was, is like,
he's losing money for
time. Yeah, and you look at that and go, this is such a strange thing that, like, because you know that you're not protected. Like, it's like, you know, it's the fundamental thing when it comes to all ethnic people, when it comes to involvement in the far right.
Yeah.
It's like, if the white supremacists that you're supporting had their way, you'd be dead or deported.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I find really strange about Kanye, with him espousing these, like, clearly, like, you know, this white supremacist or these traditionally white Nazi ideologies.
Mm.
I'm just sitting there being like, but why? Because you know that they're not going to accept you.
I don't think he's believes in white supremacy, and I might be wrong, so I kind of want to go into it with you, like, see what you think. But like, my opinion, like, I think that you can kind of see from 2016, like, we start with the MAGA, like, that came from a place of him being like, why are Black Democrats told we have to vote? Like, why are Black people told we have to vote for Democrats?
Yeah.
And that's not freedom. And everyone's like, what? Are you saying vote for Trump? And he was like, well, I'm not, but like, we should be allowed to. And they're like, what? And you can see how that, like, him being told no, like, just fueled him to double down again and again and again. And you can see, like, over the years, then he would say, oh, sorry about MAGA. And then everyone's like, yeah, you shouldn't be, you should never say that. You should be voting Democrat. He's like, actually, no, I shouldn't. Like, I'm like, and then you go back. So that so back
it's
and
like,
forth.
It's that, like, sort of, it's almost like, and I think, like, is it that kind of like the doubling down? It's like, so each stage.
It's because of the response he gets. And I completely see, like, one of the quotes I do like that he said, I think it was on Alex Jones, but he said, I don't like the word evil with Nazi. And that's a crazy quote. And like, if you put that in a, like, the media, and like, he said that, that's so bad. But it's like, I do agree with that, because Nazis are human. Like, Nazis are real, normal people that, like, get pushed. Like, nowadays it's the algorithms that push, like, the content, and they brainwash
it
people.
It kind of goes into, like, there's a book, I believe it's called, like, Hitler's Willing Executioners, that's like, here's the steps that, like, here's the steps in terms of convincing the average German in the 1930s, like, it was the kind of levels of, like, propagandizing. It was the thing. Here are the things that kind of made people willing to condone the extermination of, like, the Holocaust, right? Like,
stuff that's still used today.
There's, like, and I think you can see the same sort of political planning sort of play out, right?
Yeah.
In the modern era, right? But I think there's that sort of thing of, like, I disagree, and I'd still say, like, I'd conflate, I would say that Nazis are evil, right? But,
well,
but I think there's a sort of thing of, like, I think when it comes to that sort of thing, when it comes to these sort of moments from Kanye, it's like, and I'm pretty solidly in the camp of, I think a lot of artists, and I will say him as well, are dumb. Yeah, I actually think they're completely. they're really fucking dumb.
Well, they're really out of touch.
And there's a degree where I'm saying, like, I'm not saying his words are being misconstrued. I think he's saying what he's saying. But I think there's a sort of thing of being like, if you could actually make a salient point about that, you can have an interesting discussion about.
Yeah.
Because it does get into that sort of question of being like, you know, I think that was kind of post World War II, there was sort of a push from both the Soviets and the US, or the Soviets especially, to be like, And I was reading something this morning, actually, talking about how there was a kind of concerted push and with to blame, like, the SS specifically. To blame the SS, the SS.
It was
and
the bad ones.
And the kind of, like, the Hitler's cabinet, the kind of the top Nazis.
Yeah.
For, to blame, place the blame solely on them and kind of alleviate or, you know, remove the blame from the average Germans.
Mm.
But then the same thing kind of happened.
Well, Rwanda
and
as well.
And the same thing happened.
Like Rwanda genocide. Like, that's kind of what they did. They kind of did like a, not ceremonial, but like, you know, they did a public, like, the worst people, they're going down. Everyone else, like, we're just going to move on.
Mm.
Like, not move on, but like, they kind of did the rehabilitation into society thing rather than.
Or like, or Japan. Get rid of everyone. Japan, like, there were certain ways in which they downplayed, like, Imperial Japan's action in China and Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Because. It was a little bit of political convenience for the Americans to have certain people in power that would have stood against the Soviets
and
the Chinese and and communist China. So I think there's a sort of thing of like I kind of see that sort of play out, but I think that's kind of my, why I kind of sit there and go, I think Kanye's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Is it's that sort of, and why I think the doubling down sort of thing, I think, and again, it kind of ties in probably that mental health sort of stuff as well, where like he gets these attacks, he gets such a negative response and then doubles down on it.
Mm.
But the problem is like, and it's that sort of thing of like, it's like when he said like, I'm a God.
Yeah.
And like, what am I supposed to say? Am I supposed to say I'm a black person? I'm a nigger? Like, there's that sort of thing of being like, and you can sit there and go, and then everything subsequent has been like, okay, here, let me explain what I meant by that. Like, why is it that like, why is it that I'm so, that I'm, you know, and this was like pre of all this. This was pre 2018 sort of thing where like, but I think there's that sort of thing of like, if you can't actually make a salient point, then what's happened is all you're doing is you're getting the
rage
response.
Headlines.
You're the response to the thing. Like, and again, like you said, this thing you said, like, and if you'd thought about what you were actually going to say, like you maybe could have said something more constructive or not said it at all.
I do think it's just like, mixed in with the crazy, like it's mixed in with the inflammatory statements he does to get attention, like through rage bait. Then, like, but underneath, there usually is like, there is a logic to his thoughts. And I do think he's stupid, like in a lot of ways and out of touch. But like, I also don't know that it's true that he had, like, he says, all my niggas are Nazis. I'm like, which black people are following you in this? Like, and like the thing is, like, with going back to like the black Democrats, that it's not on black people that Trump got in. That's on like the demographics. Like, well, no one's following Kanye
consistently, and it's a sort
it's
of
white people.
Well, no,
it's Latinas.
Well, it's specifically consistently like black people, black men, and black women.
Yeah, it's like 90%
consistently the vote Democrat.
Yeah.
And
then we're not the problem.
And again, I think that kind of speaks to that sort of thing of like, and I think there is that level of impulsiveness where he says something, but then it's like, okay, cool. But then like the backlash you got was like, cool, if you'd come out and said at that point in 2016 and been like, yeah, I feel like there's an expectation, there's a semi-exit, or there's a kind of an idea on the Democrats to kind of consistently rely on black voters to say, actually, like, and they never really actually offer us anything in particular.
No, it's just
more
expected.
It's the sort of thing, it's like how someone talked about, I remember hearing an interview where someone talked about who, a woman who'd voted for Trump, who was like, but specifically because of the Democrats' response to abortion, but on the point that she was like, the Democrats will never codify abortion rights. Because it's politically convenient to have it as a sword, has something they can wield to say, well, if you vote for the Republicans or the Republicans get into power, they're going to ban abortion, right?
Yeah.
The Democrats wanted something to kind of wield over us or something they can use us. It's like, as a kind of like, you know, we're not going to do anything actually to codify this right, We want it to use it as a political tool. And I think you can make the same commentary about black people in the States where it's like the Democrats, it's politically convenient to be like, well, like we always vote black people vote Democrat.
Yeah, they're the safe ones. They do what they're told.
Without necessarily questioning why. But then obviously then Kanye going so hostily behind Trump was like, okay, cool. Like you kind of just said it and then the backlash was so big, so then you did something, another thing that's impulsive.
Like, you cannot tell me what to do. So I do want to get into, like, the, like...
We've got 7 minutes.
Okay. Not, yeah, maybe after we'll go into, like, the... So oppositional defiance disorder is something that I've worked a lot with, and, like, the way... PDA, pathological demand avoidance, is another one. Like, we're lots of, I'm not saying that he has it. I don't know that he has autism. I don't know that he is bipolar, but a lot of his behaviors are very similar to people with these conditions.
Or, like, when he was wearing the balaclava, like, I remember people talking about him wearing the balaclavas and what sort of thing. All that sort of stuff, like, yeah, like, kind of factored into that.
Like, there's so much. And, but also, I, like, his, throughout all of his phases, like when I had my break, like when I came back after the few years of just like, I need a breather, like there's all these long form interviews where he's going on Candace Owens, he's going on Alex Jones,
he's going on, yeah, like Piers
and
Morgan.
They're actually really, I really recommend watching them. I need to say, I'm going to archive them, because like, he actually explains a lot, and he actually, like, you know, with the, he says, I love Hitler.
Yeah.
That on its own, bad. But then he goes around and be like, I'm a Christian, and he's like, like the way, the reasons for it are misguided, but they are thorough, and he has a foundation for all of his opinions. I disagree with a lot of them.
So it's almost like he has for himself some sort of consistent moral principle that he's basing this off.
And he's recorded
regardless of whether or not we as an audience or as a society would sit there and go, yeah, like that's not a good set of moral principles.
But there is, like, thought, like, behind it.
He's
in some areas.
In his mind, he's building off a proper moral, of some kind of consistent moral principle.
And then we can get into, like, the Christianity of it all, because, like, you know, I'm pretty against it with black people, but he's consistently been very influenced by Christianity and God. And again, like, his relationship over the years, he's like, I'm a God, no, God is God. Like, he goes back and forth all the time. But at the core of it, it's, like, a lot of his white supremacy is about loving everyone no matter what. And, like, because I'm in special ed, like, you know, the kids do, they, like, do way worse stuff that he than Kanye's done. Like,
it's like that sort of thing. I've been, like, I feel like I've seen, was it La Russell recently? It's funny because, like, and again, I think the response was everyone clowned on him. So I think it's that sort of thing, but again, had the same sort of thing where he goes through and he's like, starts off and then just starts this listing of people, but like, of that, he's like, this person, he's like, my producer said that my producer and my manager didn't want me to put the song out. He's like, and then he starts listening to this thing and goes, and then it's like, this person is heaven sent, this person is heaven sent. Yeah. And he's like, R. Kelly was heaven sent, and then just goes down this list of fucking horrible people who've done terrible things.
Yeah.
And then he, again, sort of thing, talks about Adolf Hitler being heaven sent. And it's that sort of thing of being like, the clapback has been very much like, and I think he kind of used the same argument as Kanye did in that sort of thing. But I think, which I think is, I still think is dumb. Like, I think
it is dumb. It is dumb. But, like, I do think, like, we do have to understand the reasons why people are going down there, because there is millions of people who are Nazis, and they do, like, I mean, I think it's the same thing with, like, Trump, Kanye, Alex Jones, Hitler. Like, everyone says, like, oh, they were so charismatic, they're so charming. At least Trump's funny. At least Kanye's funny. He has these sound bites. And it's like, why are people...
It's like the,
you know, seduced by it.
It's the kind of sort of thing I've been like, it's the sort of, A, the media, but also it's kind of on us as a consumer base as well to kind of sit there and go, well, actually,
It's not that hard. I think it's like people trying to train it out of us, but like, that's why it's good to be like, media literacy is so crucial because like, and I want to go into like how Nazism and white supremacy is pushed onto young people, why it's appealing, people like Clavicula and like the Manosphere. Like, we have so many new influences and threats to young people and mentally ill people, vulnerable people, people who don't have, like, if they only have, like, yes men around them, like, like, if they don't have safe people where they can go to with their questions. So, like, me, for example, like, I'm also very into my conspiracies. And I like being friends with Eddie because he's one of the only people I listen to. But I do feel confident. Like, cause so I'm on X as well now. Mm. So my whole feed is just, you know, Grok, what ethnicity is this pedophile?
Yeah.
And it's like just either Jewish or Muslim always. Like,
it's a sort of, it was like,
I could go to you though, and I could be like, "Was it really 6 million?" And I feel like we could go back and forth. Like, I do believe it.
Yeah,
it
just
was
to be
fucking
very
six,
clear. Yeah,
it fucking was 6 million. But like, I also am seeing like, why are so many people questioning it? So I do go into it, and I look into. I had to research that myself because I was seeing.